This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Did you have a security teddy or a security blanket as a kid? Maybe your child had one, or maybe you're trying to wean a child off a small, manky piece of cloth or a teddy bear that has one eye, no fur, and to the point where it's all shiny and it stinks. Well, you may have seen a little monkey called Punch. Now, Punch lives in a zoo just outside of Tokyo, and he's gone viral because he was rejected by all of the other monkeys at the zoo. And now Punch has become very attached to a toy monkey from IKEA. Videos show him snuggling up with it, dragging it around, it never leaving his side, to the point, right, where this toy orangutan has sold out at IKEA. But zookeepers say that when Punch feels safe, he will leave his toy surrogate and he will return to the other monkeys. So, did you have a surrogate? Did you have a security toy or a security blanket? What was its name? And how long did you have it? And in big news, exciting news, at around 11:50 today on The Conversation Hour, we will announce who's taking over from me while I have the privilege of jumping into the very early breakfast chair with Bob Murphy while Charnel Vella takes maternity leave. So let me just tell you, you are going to be very, very happy as to who's filling in here for me on The Conversation Hour. So that's coming up at about a quarter to 12. But did your child have a security blanket or a security teddy? How long did you have it? What was its name? And what lengths did you go to ensure that you never lost that security teddy?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So mine was called Ralph. He was once bright, fluffy pink. He was a teddy bear, but he ended up pretty much threadbare and shiny. And Ralph went everywhere with me. I would never leave the house without him. And even kind of as I got older, even as I aged and needed him less, in times of really great stress, if I was really upset, Ralph came out. But eventually we had to bury Ralph in the backyard in a marked grave because he just got too stinky. But he was a big part of my life. So did your child, maybe your child has one now, have a security teddy, have a security blanket? You might have seen Punch the monkey just outside of Tokyo, and he's been dragging his little comfort toy all around because the other monkeys have rejected him. Oh no, it breaks your heart. We're going to talk about the theory behind that in just a moment. But Simone's call from Point Lonsdale. Good morning.
Oh, hi there. Just one sec. Sorry, just answering the door.
Groceries? Delivery?
She's just on the veranda. You can pop out. Sorry, and I'm back. And
that's all right. Take your time.
Yes, I had a blankie when I was little.
Yeah.
And I was very tall, and I had my blankie and sucked my thumb until I was about 7, so I looked like I was about 10, so it wasn't a good look. But anyway, I carted it around everywhere, and when I got to when we thought I really needed to get rid of it and stop sucking my thumb as well, my mum, who was a heavy smoker, promised that she would give up smoking if I gave up my blankie. Yeah. So we popped my blankie up on the top shelf of a cupboard where I couldn't get it, and Mum said she'd give up smoking, and I gave up my blankie and she didn't give up smoking. So early betrayal, but at least it achieved the purpose.
Oh, it's so stressful, isn't it? Like, and we remember them. I spoke on air about my daughter lost Little Penguin once. So the name suggests what sort of teddy it was. And the amount of stories, Simone, that came out of the lengths that people went to protect their little, you know, companion teddies and their blankets. And a listener sent in a a little bunny for my daughter, and she still has it now. And it's called Bunny.
Oh my gosh.
We're not very creative with the names.
Well, mine was called Blanky, so, you know.
Yeah. I know. That's just simple. But they're just so important. Oh, Simone, thank you. Kathy's in Sunbury. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I just wanted to say we've had my daughter had severe gastro last night at 20 years of age, and I got up this morning and she was still holding her 20-year-old Fifi the poodle.
Sometimes you just need Fifi.
She just needed Fifi. And we've had a lost story too. We lost her up at Wangaratta on the side of the road. And I put a call out to my family, and one of my beautiful cousin's wives drove 40 minutes to grab her and send her back to us.
Oh, thank goodness you found her. There's nothing sadder than a teddy kind of stuck up on a fence where you know that someone has dropped, and you're thinking there is heartbreak, there are tears and there are tantrums, and that's just coming from the parent somewhere in a house. Somewhere. Oh, is she okay now, Kathy, your daughter?
She was on the mend. Yeah, thank goodness. Thank goodness it's been a crazy night for her.
Oh, nothing like a bout of gastro. That's why you're going to need Fifi. Thank you. Oh, Rochelle, I had a big soft pillow called Popo. It smelt wonderful. That's from Sue. Well, Sarah O'Doherty is a psychologist and the president of the Australian Association of Psychologists Incorporated. Sarah, there's a reason why we have Popo and Fifi and Little Penguin and Ralph. They're important to us, and they're a stage of growing up, attaching ourselves to a particular teddy.
They absolutely are, Rochelle. And I think that there's a couple of different things here that is so crucial. The first is that we all need a sense of comfort, whether it's people or whether it's baby monkeys. We are craving the sense of comfort. And as we're growing up out of that infant stage, we still want to be attached, actually physically attached to our primary caregivers, often our mothers. And this is where we're also going through a stage of independence, which is very exciting for the young child, but it's also very anxiety provoking. And sometimes what we call a transitional object, a comfort toy, a blankie, something that provides that sense of comfort, can be almost like that substitute for that ever-present mother figure. And that's what we're seeing in Baby Punch.
Yes.
And I think that's also what we're seeing in a lot of these stories that we're now hearing about their Fifi and, you know, the penguin and all of those other lovely objects that hold so much precious memory for us now kids.
Absolutely. When there's text here saying I've just turned 60, I still have my stuffed chimp from toddlerhood, Mickey the monkey. So people,
ooh, that's gorgeous,
still have them. When, as parents, as carers, as grandparents, when we think that's enough now, right? You need to detach yourself. And sometimes you'll see people have just like a little square of what was once a large blanket. I saw this on the weekend. I knew straight away what was happening. A young girl walked out of a place where you get your ears pierced, and she was in tears. I thought, this hasn't gone well in terms of getting her ears pierced. There were no earrings in her ear, so obviously she freaked out. And she was saying to her mum, because we were walking right behind them, just give it to me, please. And she was crying. And her mum pulled out this little manky piece of cloth. And I knew straight away what it was. It was her security blanket. And obviously she still carries it with her, even though she was maybe 10 or 12 years of age. At what point do we actually, or should we ever, say you're cut off?
I'm not entirely certain that we need to say that you're cut off. So what typically happens is children will grow out of this, this need to have that comfort object with them every moment of the day. And this often happens during late childhood, sometimes during adolescence, because it stops being socially normative to hold and have that comfort object. Or it might be that transitional object like a blankie that then becomes a comfort square that we hold in our pockets or our bags or something like that. And something that is small and portable, there's really nothing wrong with that. All it does is allows us to soothe ourselves, almost like a sensory toy or a fidget toy allows us to soothe our nervous system, because we have that historical connection to that sense of soothing when we have access to it. So we don't have to be, as parents, super harsh about it and let our kids know that there is a cutoff. It's more about letting them know that they are safe without it, and that a lot of people their age might not have something similar. And so that might be another slow transition out of using it constantly.
Some of the lengths that people have gone to over the years to find, you know, the Ralph or the Fifi or the monkey, whatever.
The replacement.
Replacement, like almost stopped planes, right? I somehow, when Little Penguin went missing, I somehow managed to speak to someone who was cleaning at Coles in the middle of the night, and she was walking up and down the aisles looking, because she knew exactly what we were going through. Millie's in Ivanhoe. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what's your story?
So I was given my blankie when I was a baby, and he became a big part of my life. I love him so much to this day. And when I was six, we did an overnight trip to Sovereign Hill, which, of course, blankie came along with. I ended up leaving him there, and I was rightfully heartbroken. So my mum and dad contacted the people of Sovereign Hill, and they shipped him down to me, and I've had him ever since, safe in my arms, which is lovely. He was with me all the time. When he would dry on the clothesline, I would stand on the clothesline and hold him while sucking my thumb. He was like my I cut like a little hole in him and would sit fully inside of him when I was younger. He's been burnt in a fire and stitched back together with a big lump on it.
Oh, Millie. So, you're not alone. I mean, there's a text here this is from Lynn. It says, I'm 87. I still have my rabbit handed down to me from my older brother. It used to be pink. It's now khaki, no ears and no tail. Sounds like Ralph. But I can't part with it. You're speaking with Sarah O'Doherty, a psychologist and the president of the Australian Association of Psychologists Incorporated. Because Punch the Monkey, a real-life monkey just outside of Tokyo, is a zoo there where the other monkeys have rejected him. And as a result, Punch has become obsessed with a toy monkey, and we're talking about those obsessions that we get, those security blankets that we get. I just wanted to quickly check in with you. There's a text here from Chris, and it says, my daughter purchased two of every security toy for her children. This enabled the bunny to be washed and not so dramatic if it was lost. My grandson called his bunny and backup bunny. That's from Chris.
That's lovely.
That's very straightforward. Oh, there's something so divine about that text. Should we have backups? I mean, that's quite clever.
I think a backup is really great. So, for instance, I'm on a local area mum's page, and there are always these calls for searching for a replacement of a lost loved object. So if we can get backups, absolutely get the backups. I know of many, many stories of really treasured blankies where the blankie has gotten manky, and sometimes it's needed to be cut in half, and then half of it gets washed, and then the other half stays with the child, and then it goes on rotation. So whatever we can do to prevent that sense of immediate grieving loss for that object by that child, let's have that on backup.
Just finally, have you seen the vision, Sarah, of Punch the Monkey, like, snuggling in to that toy orangutan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. And it absolutely breaks my heart.
Oh, it was just the most heartbreaking, incredible vision to watch. Do you think he will eventually go back to the other monkeys? I'm not saying you're a psychologist of monkeys, but, you know, we're very similar.
Well, I have actually seen some of the more recent vision of him being accepted by a little bit more of his monkey troop.
Good.
So that's really good. It's really good. But what we know about this is that we do crave comfort. And he was rejected by his mother at birth. He, like any primate, needs that closeness and that comfort. And so he is using that toy monkey as his transitional object, but he's also seeking acceptance and comfort from the rest of the troop. So there will be a time when he eventually does let go of that monkey so that he can join the social group that he's part of.
Well, a text has come in saying, please let people know that the monkey has now been adopted by another adult monkey. So it's okay. Punch is all right. Sarah, thank you. We've got so many calls and texts on this. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Rochelle. Thank you.
Sarah O'Doherty, psychologist. Kate is in Geelong. Morning.
Morning, Rochelle. How are you?
Good. Who was yours? Did you have a security teddy?
Yes, his name was Planky, and he was a blanket, and he went everywhere with me, school camps. My mum would hide him in my sleeping bag, weekends away, and I had him till I was 35 years old. But then I put him away in a cupboard when I went through a really traumatic relationship breakup. So when I actually thought I needed him, I put him away because I needed to stand on my own two feet.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So using it in a different way, going, okay, it's time now. And do you still have it?
I still do. Planky's still up in my top shelf. And I bring him down sometimes when I'm feeling sad, a bit like how you would get Ralph out.
Yeah, I'd have to dig him up. It wouldn't be great. But
but no, I get him out from time to time. But no, really, he's put away now. And it was sort of like a signpost in my life where I had to say goodbye to him.
And they smell different, don't they? There's something about your security teddy, but the first thing you do is you smell them and it just brings you a sense of comfort. Kate, thank you. Wow, this has really raised a lot of emotions with people. This one, it just says, oh my goodness, this is bringing up some trauma. I've never understood why my husband wanted our son to give up his Foxy. He needed it. I won many arguments we had about it, but my son, who's now 6, still sleeps with Foxy every night. He doesn't need it everywhere, just bed. And yes, we have 3 Foxies. Just let them cuddle their toys if they need them. P.S. I also love Punch. That's come through as well. We'll try and get back to more of your calls and texts on this a little later in the program. Don't forget, in about half an hour's time, all will be revealed as to who's going to be filling in for me on the Conversation Hour when I go and fill in on breakfast. Yep, it's a little game of musical chairs here.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Oh, wow. I'm finding it hard to concentrate because you're all sending me the most personal and beautiful stories with some of the most gorgeous names of your security teddies and security blankets. So we'll try and get back to them a little later in the program. But in terms of reminiscing, it does lead beautifully into our next story because I actually want to ask you if you remember maybe your mum or maybe your grandmother when they were getting ready to go out. So you knew that they were going out. What were the little things that they did that signified that maybe it was a special dinner or a special night? So my nana would put on fragrance and it was Red Door. So as soon as I smell Red Door fragrance, it takes me straight back. And I knew that as soon as she put on that fragrance that I could run into her bedroom and I could see her putting on the final touches of her outfit. So I would watch her open up a jewelry box and maybe select a pearl. Generally, she would love to wear pearls. I can still smell the hairspray from her freshly set hair. And my nan loved fashion. She loved the ritual of dressing up. And these events were never really fancy. It was probably just dinner with friends and probably a funeral, if I'm honest. But her love of clothes is what's given me my love of fashion. And Kate Mead, 774 station reporter, who also loves fashion, and you and I, my friend, basically just swap dresses that we find each other at the op shop. But you've managed to speak to someone as a part of the Melbourne Fashion Festival. He's a keynote speaker, and we'll get to that in just a tick. But what struck me about the keynote you spoke with was where his love of fashion came from. It was from those little moments of his mum.
Little moments of encouragement. And what the wonderful thing about speaking with him is, and his name's Prabul Gurung, is that he really takes those messages that he was brought up with and has brought it right through his career, and nearly you can see it at every touch point that he has throughout his creative process.
So I don't know a lot about him. Can you tell us about, so Prabul Gurung is his name. He's a Nepalese-American fashion designer. He's the keynote speaker here at Melbourne Fashion Festival. But he's got millions of followers. I know nothing about him.
Millions and millions. So born in Singapore, grew up in Nepal. He has dressed the notable celebrities. We're talking about Oprah Winfrey and Michelle Obama.
Sarah but, Jessica Parker. If you're dressed in SJP...
You're up there, aren't you? You've nailed
it. Style, absolutely.
You've nailed it. And, you know, the Met Gala, one of his dresses that is here for this year's fashion festival has over 100,000 pearls that have been hand-stitched onto a dress that was first shown at the Met Gala in 2023. But it's outside of his work for fashion that he's equally as known for. You know, he's a great activist for social and political causes. He's a big backer of women's rights and LGBTQ rights, racial justice and voting rights.
Because I could imagine there wouldn't be a lot of designers from Nepal. Very few.
You know that saying, you cannot be what you cannot see? And he talks so passionately about realizing as a young boy, knowing that he wanted to do this and was being laughed at because there was no fashion in Nepal. There was no one to look up to. There was no one to say, well, here's your pathway. And there is a beautiful connection for him and Victoria, Melbourne, is that he 25 years ago, he was here. He spent some time here. He worked with our designers and our stylists. He assisted, he learned. And then he's taken
a
little bit
story.
As he's travelled around the world to become based in New York and having a little visit with us at the moment.
Well, you were lucky enough to sit down with him. And as I said, I didn't know anything about him, but I've learned so much. So this is just a little bit of your chat, who is with Prabul Garong. He is a Nepalese-American fashion designer based in New York at the moment, but one of the keynote speakers at Melbourne Fashion Festival. And Kate Mead, you started off by basically just asking about where his fascination from fashion came from. And this is what he said.
You know, I remember my first foray into anything fashion was my mom's perfume bottle and lipstick bottle, like the Yves Saint Laurent Rive Gauche perfume bottle and this like little Dior lipstick that she had. I was fascinated by when she dabbed it on her, how she smelled and how alive she came. Her posture changed. And when she put on that red crimson lipstick, ruby red lipstick rather, on her lips, it changed who she was and how she, you know, walked. That power of transformation from those little bottles, I remember thinking, wow, what is it in there? You know, that magical thing. Even though I was so far away from everything that was happening back in Nepal, where there was no fashion industry at that time, I remember thinking to myself, you know, like, is it a possibility? But then I started traveling, and I'll never forget, I was in London, and I saw this beautiful, beautiful Chanel dress on a window late at night. And I remember what I felt in this ivory chiffon dress hanging there. I felt like, oh my God, this is so powerful. And then it was Oprah Winfrey, actually, watching a show. And it was about living your dreams. And I didn't know who she was at that time. I was back home in Nepal. When I watched that episode, I realized, you know, this could be a possibility for me. But I will never forget. I was in New York, coming home, and I saw this woman, three women talking on the middle of the street, and I looked from afar and I said, wait, that looks like my dress, you know. And I walked by them, and then I went back and told her, and I said, hey, I just wanted to say you look beautiful. And she said, oh my God, thank you. And she was like, but she was like kind of like in a skeptic. And I said with utmost humility, let me just say this, it was something that I designed. And she was like, and I said, so thank you. I said, you know, you don't know me. The fact that you choose to buy my dress and support my idea and creativity, I'm forever grateful to you. And those are the moments when I see people who have decided to spend their hard-earned dollars on something that I believed in. That's something that I feel really grateful about. What fashion does is it allows people to participate in a creative field. By choosing what to wear, whether a red blouse or a white blouse or a black t-shirt or a white t-shirt, you're already participating in it. When you no longer make it feel intimidating, you allow people to express themselves. And expressing themselves, an individual, when they do that, I think it empowers them. And that's what a true fashion is.
So that's Prabul Garong speaking with 774 station reporter Kate Mead, who is a keynote speaker for the Melbourne Fashion Festival. He sounds so divine. And that passion for fashion, could you imagine, passion for fashion, I didn't mean for that to rhyme. Could you imagine just sort of stopping a car, getting out and saying to someone, thank you for buying my dress? The visual of that is so strong.
It's that understanding that if you think about what you earn per hour, and then making a decision on how you spend that money. And when an item, whatever that might be, might work out to be 1 hour of your work time or two or three or four or a day's work to buy that one item. To have that sense of self, to know that someone has had to work those hours to be able to purchase, it's intentional. He has a gratefulness about him. And I think that's what we can be taking away when we're putting our hands on clothes or making a decision about those items that we buy, whether it's at an op shop or something brand new. It's, wait a minute, I've worked for this.
Yeah.
I've had to raise that money in some capacity. How do I want it? How will I wear it? And what will it mean to me?
And I think that's one of the big shifts that we've seen in the Melbourne Fashion Festival is that once it was sort of for the highfalutin, it was for the fashionistas, it was for the designers and the stores, whereas now it's more about us, the normal people. It's about sustainability, it's about choices, it's about learning to sew or learning the backstory or understanding where your pieces come from and the impact that it may or may not have on others. So just finally, Kate Mead, as the Melbourne Fashion Festival is still underway at the moment, have you felt that shift?
Absolutely. And you've just nailed it. 1996, this started 30 years ago, and it was for the media, the buyers, the who's who in fashion. Now it's about diversity and making sure that it's accessible and there's an education around it about what are we doing with all this fabric? Why do we want to see it sustainable and not just fill up tips and rubbish tips?
Yeah, that's it. That's absolutely it. Thank you. Thank you for introducing me to Prabhul. I'm going to start to follow him because I found him fascinating.
I'm following him everywhere.
Kate Mead, 774 station reporter there, speaking with Prabhul Gurung. Still coming up in just a moment, we're going to follow on from a comment that was made on Breakfast from Kathy Lett. And she used the term your 60s. And by that, I mean, according to Kathy Lett, she believes that women hit their sexual prime in their 60s. Do you agree with that? We're going to pull that apart a little bit more. And also we will announce who's going to be filling in for me on the Conversation Hour in about 10, 15 minutes time whilst I go and fill in on Breakfast. We'll try and get back to more of your calls on security blankets and teddies as well. Elsie says, Rish, you can wash teddies. I'm so sad about Ralph. He didn't need to be buried. No, he actually did. There was no saving Ralph. Ralph needed to be buried, but it was all right. It was a nice service. He's got a marked grave. Rish, as a toddler, my son, with no encouragement from us, adopted an old pair of boxer shorts as his security blanket. Oh, dear me. It started when I was away for a weekend. Friends called them woo-woo. It was a little bit embarrassing, but we got used to it. We took them everywhere for a couple of years. Wowee, I think that's the first. And I still have my teddy from my uncle, says this. It was brought secondhand when I was only two or three. I'm now 52 years of age. No eyes, holes in him, threadbare in places, but he's still my Freddy teddy from Uncle Eddie. Oh, my goodness, some of these stories. We'll get back to those in just a moment.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So on a Tuesday at around 6:30 on Breakfast, Bob and Charnel do the confessional, so different celebrities confessing to something. And today it was Kathy Lett, and basically it was just one bombshell after another. But one that she dropped was the label that she gave 60s. So she claimed that when women hit their sexual prime, it's in their 60s.
It's all about saying to women, have a sensational second act and lean into your sexuality. Because I think women hit their sexual prime in their 60s or 60s, as I thought. And I don't think women give up sex when they get old. I think they get old if they give up sex. So keep getting horizontal.
So that's Kathy Lett speaking with Bob and Charnel on our breakfast program this morning. So, ladies, if you're in your 60s, do you feel like you're in your 60s? 1-300-222-774. It's not my label. It's Kathy Lett's label. Tanya Coons is a clinical sexologist and relationship counsellor with around 20 years' experience. Is Kathy Lett right, Tanya?
Hey, Rochelle. Yes, I think that she has a point there. One of my teachers said to me many years ago, you get to look forward to the best sex of your life in your 40s, 50s and 60s.
And why is that?
Personally, I think it's because people know their bodies more. They understand themselves. They've had some time to sit with their sexuality, maybe explore some things. If they're in a long-term relationship, they know that they may know their partner quite well. And I also think that, yeah, there's time to understand how your body works and what works for you, rather than feeling like you have to conform to all the messages that are constantly flying at us from the media and other such sources.
How much of it has to do with the fact that in your 50s, you've gone through perimenopause and menopause, and your sex drive just goes, it disappears for most women. The idea that it comes back in your 60s, are people told that?
I think what people really need to understand is your sex drive or your libido, it's always fluctuating. It's up and down throughout your life. So what we want to do is have it in a nice even keel. Like think of a dolphin jumping in and out of the water. We're up a little bit, we're down a little bit, up and down. And then going through menopause can be quite hectic because the hormones do interesting things to our body. We're experiencing things that aren't very sexy at all, like bloating and hot flushes and feeling a bit anxious and night sweats. All those things aren't very sexy. So they can take us away from the ability to engage with and feel sexy in our bodies while we're sort of navigating a hormonal thunderstorm, really.
So what happens to our hormones in our 60s versus coming out of them when they're on a roller coaster in our late 40s and 50s?
Well, I think we need to understand that bodies change. I mean, we are constantly changing in our bodies from the moment we're born to the moment we die. Our bodies are changing. And if we realize that and understand it, we can work with the body that we have today. And I'm very well known for saying all bodies are capable of pleasure. And how we do that, how we go about it, what works for us is really going to be age dependent. So if we're in our 60s and expecting to jump around the bedroom like we did in our 20s, we might be disappointed or we might do ourselves an injury. Don't know. But if we understand, oh, this is my body now, so it might take a little longer to arouse if there's a dip in some of the hormones, particularly for folks with vaginas, there can be a bit of atrophying, so the thin skin, the skin thins out. And so it might, people who have never needed to use lubricant before might need to use lubricant. That's not a stigma or anything wrong. It is adjusting to what's happening for your body.
And has that changed? Has the stigma around it changed, the idea that old people don't have sex? Is that, and what is old now, right? I guess maybe the older I get, my definition of old seems to get a little looser. But what?
So does mine.
Has that changed?
I think it has. I think, I think when I sort of entered the field, lots of people were just assuming that your sex life ended when you turned 50. And I was horrified at this because I see lots of clients, I know lots of people. People are really having sex right into their 90s. And the people that understand that their body is changing and that can work with the body that they have can really appreciate and understand and enjoy a lot of sexual pleasure. So there doesn't need to be pressure around it on if we put that on ourselves. It's more about, okay, how does my body work? How do I want to interact with my partner?
The idea,
a lot of things to navigate.
Yeah. Tanya Coons is with you, a clinical sexologist and relationship counsellor. We're talking about the comment that Kathy Lett made this morning on our breakfast program about women enjoying sex and getting into their sexual prime in their 60s. At the same time, Tanya, we're also hearing that some couples are divorcing later. So are you finding that maybe women and men are in their 60s newly single?
Yes, that's quite a big cohort. And then that's really a lot to navigate, isn't it? When you've been with one partner for maybe 20, 30, 40 years and suddenly you're out in the dating world, it's certainly changed since you were last dating. There's a lot more known about bodies and how they arouse and what people are hoping for. There's also a lot more being taught and understood about consent culture. And that can be really difficult for lots of people to navigate while they're dating. And then there's also what's happening with your own body and whether your sexual functioning is what it was when you were last dating, or you have to navigate different things.
Thank you so much. Lots of texts on this saying, okay, all right, it's just around the corner for me, so this is good to know. This says, I'm 54. I seem to have lost the drive. My husband will be counting down the days until I'm 60, says just one of the texts. Tanya, thank you. Tanya Coons, clinical sexologist and relationship counsellor. And you can always go back to the ABC website and to the Listen app if you want to listen to the confessional that's done with Bob and Charnel. However, that will be me in about a week and a half's time. If you missed this morning, Charnel is going on maternity leave, and I have the wonderful pleasure of filling in for Charnel while she's on mat leave, which does mean that there's a little gap here on the Conversation Hour. So in just a moment, I'm going to let you know who that is. There's been some really good guesses. One in particular, I think, might have got it right. But we've also been talking about those security blankets, how long we hold on to them for. So you may have seen the vision doing the rounds of Punch, the little monkey who lives in a zoo just outside of Tokyo. He was rejected by all of the other monkeys. So Punch became totally obsessed with a toy monkey from IKEA. And that monkey's now sold out in a lot of IKEAs, by the way. However, now Punch has been accepted and adopted by some of the monkeys. But there was vision of him dragging it around, snuggling it, cuddling it. And we've been talking about the importance of those attachment teddies and blankets. This is from Simon. Rish, we ended up having six versions of my son's spotty blah blah doll. We had to swap them when he was asleep. And we had to rush a courier when we left one overseas. You're not alone, Simon. There's been a lot of blankies and teddies sent back from overseas. And this is from Anonymous. And it says, I'm a 42-year-old man and I couldn't sleep without my Elmo teddy at night. It's a soothing tool. I use it to ease the loneliness I feel. I think many of us can relate to Punch the monkey sometimes. Try and keep those calls and texts coming through. In just a tick, I'm going to let you know who, as of in about a week and a half, is going to be your gorgeous new host here on The Conversation Hour.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So if you missed the announcement this morning at about 20 past 7 on the breakfast program, I admitted that today, and I'm not joking, I am going off to buy a coffee plunger and an alarm clock, because from about a week and a half's time, from the 9th of March, Charnel Vella goes off on maternity leave, and I have the privilege of filling in for her and co-hosting with Mr. Bob Murphy on breakfast. So looking forward to that. Cannot wait. Bob and I will have to stop laughing because we laugh far too much. But that means that someone is filling in here for me on this particular program. This, Rish, good morning. I can't believe I'm so involved with radio programs for so long. We Gippslanders need to stick together. Rochelle, I wish you all the best with your move, but I so hope so much that our dear Mary will be filling in your spot. Lou from Gippsland, we had many, many guesses, but the gorgeous Mary Guerin will be your host on The Conversation Hour from the 9th of March. Lou in Gippsland got it right, Mary.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they're really wanting Mary McDonald. Yeah. Lou, I really hope you meant me, because it's me.
Mary, I was reading up. I mean, I've known you for years and years and years. And people know you, of course, from the television, from the nightly news. They would know you as a correspondent, as a sports journalist. But I couldn't think of a more perfect person. The Convo Hour is so special. I mean, yes. I'm not just saying that because it's my program.
Well, but you've made it special, Rish. Come on. Seriously, you've made it such a... Look at today's show.
It's a family.
It's a family. Yeah. The wonderful topics you bring to it. We have talked about this, and you say that, you know, it can just be anything and for anyone on any day. Yeah. And that's such a beautiful, wonderful thing that you have created.
It's such a little family. And yeah. that's why I'm so glad that it's you that is filling in for this, because it's about the listeners and the stories that they share, sometimes hilarious, sometimes heartbreaking. And there's so much love now that is just texting in for you saying, yay, 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 I am so happy. And this is a good time for you. Like, this is a good time for you and for your family to be doing this.
It is. It is. The last couple of years have been just your regular roller coaster. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of changes.
Yeah.
And a lot of them very good, as I said. One of the best changes was that I could be at home with the kids more. They were finishing school. Wonderful to be around them a lot. They would probably tell you that they were the only ones I could practice my interviewing on. I couldn't stop interviewing. So I'll be happy that I've come here. No, you're exactly right. This is a wonderful moment for me to come here, have the privilege, as you say, of stepping into your wonderful elegant shoes. You're always wearing elegant shoes. I can't promise I'll start doing that. But to be here with your lovely audience, I keep thinking of it as like carrying a Ming vase.
Yeah.
I'm just
aren't we all? Don't break it.
I don't want to break it.
I'm doing the same thing on breakfast as well. It's so incredible, though, when I look around at all of the different positions that you've held and all of the correspondence, the Coro posies that you've had over the years, from the UK to Europe. I mean, I could never imagine being in one of those positions and doing that. That must have just been so grueling and exciting all at the same time.
It was incredible. Anyone who's been a foreign correspondent, incredibly privileged position, but to be in Europe at the time, it was the Euro crisis, it was the migrant crisis, it was terrorism attacks. Back when they were starting, would you believe, you know, 2015, in a way that we kept seeing afterwards. It's just, yeah, that was an adrenaline pumping period of
and
time.
You would have seen change in terms of the staffing and the resourcing and how that's changed over the years. Like, a lot of the time you probably would have spent on your own filming it with one cameraman or on your own iPhone or whatever it may be.
Oh, absolutely. I'm happy to say the ABC has absolutely thrown much more resources into it in terms of, you know, creating more digital and more flexible support into all of those bureaus. There were definitely times where it was just, you know, we're racing along in the middle of the night to try and get to, you know, like a disaster zone and you know, you're operating on no sleep and so forth. And that's not ideal practice. But, you know, that was, as I say, an incredible privilege. Good for a particular moment.
I never know how you'd always make the flights. I'd always be really impressed with how you managed to get there, because, you know, we can't just charter a plane. We don't have helicopters. We don't have anything. And I would always watch correspondents, whether it be yourself or Lisa Miller or Michael Rowland. I mean, thinking, how the hell did they get there? Like,
I had a cameraman once tell me that once you actually check the bags in, you could just stroll up to the gate anyway, because you knew that they couldn't leave, because we had so many bags and so much equipment on the plane that they couldn't leave without us. So that, you know, that helped. You know, and that was, as I say, a wonderful time. But to come back here, do the sports correspondent, and then to have the privilege of doing something like radio, you can only do those sort of high octane things for so long. And there's only so much time that you can really have that vicarious trauma and have that pace. So, you know,
radio
is
special in
season.
That sense, isn't it? That
exactly.
You can just sit here. Does it, like, I know when the announcement was made that I was filling in for breakfast, people started talking about, oh, 20 years and she started at this and that. And I was like, wow. Where does the time go?
Exactly.
Can you believe, because you're like 30 years of being a journo and a correspondent and a presenter. Yeah. What? How did this happen to
us? How did it happen? But you still got these fantastic guests and people who are telling us that in our 60s, as you just said, we've got so much more
apparently
to look forward to.
Your sex life is just about to kick in, all right? So
excellent.
This is something to be looking forward to.
This is great news.
You're listening to the voice of Mary Guerin, who will be from the 9th of March, my replacement here on The Conversation Hour, as the musical chairs occurs and I step in to the breakfast spot with Bob Murphy filling in for Charnel when she goes on maternity leave. Can I just read you some of the messages? Fab choice. I can't wait to hear more of Mary. Love, 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 Mary. Thank you so much. That's from Sally, who's in Buninyong. Great news about Mary. This has cheered me up to no end. This is just wonderful. And another that says, lovely to hear that Mary is coming to the Conversation Hour. A very warm welcome. And lovely to hear, Rochelle, that you're going to breakfast as well. So this is just great news all round.
That is great news. Are you excited about breakfast?
I am. Yeah. I love co-hosting more than anything, I have to say, you know, whether it be the Friday Review, the Conversation Hour, I had co-hosts for years and years and years. there's something about a co-host partnership.
Yep.
That's like it's a special kind of marriage, and there's a special kind of language that you speak and a support that you have for each other. I can't wait.
And Bob's a hoot.
Oh, mate, we laugh too. That's the only problem, right? We laugh too much.
There's going to be a dump button for your laughter.
Yes. And we both dress on theme. So we're already, you know, thinking, texting each other what the dress code and the dress theme will be for each day.
Oh, yeah. You've got to put this somewhere on socials for sure.
Now, Mary, we've been talking about security blankets, security teddies. Let's have a chat to Liz, who's called through. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Is this your security teddy or security blanket or someone else's?
It was my son's. So my elder son is 40, but when he was a baby, somebody gave him a lovely blue rabbit and he called him Baba. And I'm certainly a great supporter of the substitute toy. So I bought one that I saw that was similar and it came in very handy.
When someone told me about the substitute toy, I felt like such an amateur. I was like, why? Because when Little Penguin disappeared, to this day, you have to be careful about when and how you raise the story of Little Penguin. I was like, Rish, seriously, Parenting 101, get a backup.
Yeah, technique. That's good.
Did you come up with this idea on your own, Liz?
No, a friend suggested it to me and I thought, that's a great idea. So I searched high and low and I found a substitute. And I think Stephen might have been maybe a year and a half old and he was really sick and he vomited all over the cot and all over his toy. And so I had to do the midnight washing and everything else. Mm. I tucked him into bed and I got out the substitute rabbit and gave it to him in the dark and he flung it out and he said, that's not Baba, and he was really upset. So I decided, quickly thinking, I said, oh, it's Bobo. It's Baba's cousin.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Oh, that's clever.
And so that kind of settled him. And to this very day, we have Baba and Bobo.
The things we come up with as parents on the spot where we're like, I tricked my daughter into eating red meat. I told her it was chicken and right? And it wasn't. And she's like, but what is beef? And I said, it's just a type of cut of chicken. Yeah. And we just called it special. And then I thought at one point I'm going to have to tell the truth because we just create these web of lies, don't we? Liz, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I've really enjoyed listening to all the stories. They've been wonderful. Thank you.
They're really nice, aren't they? It all started because of Punch the Monkey.
It all starts with Santa Claus. It's a slippery slope from there. I remember my beloved nephew once when he was a toddler, he's a grown man now, he was in the back seat of a car. My sister was driving and he was so upset and he needed his teddy bear, which I think I gave him, which was special.
Yeah.
Special when, the favourite animal is the one that you gave him. And he was crying and crying and I turned around and said, what if I get in the back and comfort you? And he said, but you're not soft.
Oh, that's good.
And
see it as a compliment, right?
Yeah.
See it as
a
compliment.
I'm a bit softer now.
Oh, Myrto is called through from South Morang. Good morning.
Good morning. I missed part of the conversation you were having about teddies and things, but I'm a senior, mature age child that still has my teddy pillow.
Yeah.
And it has travelled with me to 7 overseas countries. Oh. It travels with me when I stay away from home, and I even took it to hospital.
Oh, a hospital, you need it, definitely. What's its name?
It doesn't have a name. Oh. It's just Teddy.
Yeah. Now, that's its name.
It's been on planes. It's been overseas locations. It does get picked and refilled with foam from time to time.
Oh.
So it's still hygienic, but I will not part with my Teddy pillow, and I will be... when the end comes, it will still come with me.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what I've learnt today, is that there's no need to get rid of it. We do need to get a little creative. Good on you, Myrto. Thank you. Rish, after our daughter's special teddy, was vomited on in the night, we got 2 subs. She knew when I washed one and swapped it out because she would say, Teddy smells different. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.